Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
Well, here's the last sentence of the reading. Superficial reconciliation can bring only superficial healing. So again, I take note today of the Jewish High Holy Days, Rosh Hashanah, the start of the year of 5777 on the Jewish calendar, which began on sundown on the 2nd of October, and Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, which begins at sundown on October 11th. Last week, in speaking of Rosh Hashanah, I spoke of three aspects of practice that have to do with the High Holy Days as a period of the start of the new year and a time of reflection and recommitment. Tefillah, prayer, teshuvah, response or repentance, and tzedekah, I have trouble pronouncing this always, righteous action, sometimes translated as charity, but it means much more than charity. And today I focus more on teshuva and tzedakah as I talk about healing with truth. And the honest self-reflection that is at the heart of teshuva requires or points to the central theme of the message today, healing with truth. Truth-telling is essential to healing, and healing is one way to describe reconciliation. Individual atonement spoken to God but not to one's fellow human being or to the person from whom one is estranged may not and certainly will not by itself be sufficient to bring about reconciliation. And what I have to say today has a personal dimension, and that I'm not speaking just of large-scale social relations, the sorts of struggle against apartheid that Desmond Tutu was part of and the reconciliation that followed, or the efforts at reconciliation that followed, but also about individual and personal relations. What I want to say is that there are ways of healing brokenness and estrangement, and that the discovery and facing of the truth is itself essential to the healing. I start with a personal story. My brother and I are somewhat older than our sisters. And Paul is 4 years older than I am, and our oldest sister is 7 years younger than I am. Our father died when I was 18 and my brother 24. And just because of the ages, we had very different sets of experiences with our father than did our sisters, who were 11, 9, and 3 at the time. And of course, there were also gender differences. And some of the differences also had to do with the different levels of discourse between teenagers and a parent, and a young child and a parent. Working together around the house and the land around the house, Paul and I had opportunities to talk with Dad. And we were old enough to have memories of our maternal grandparents, the last of whom died when I was 13. But we two had never met our paternal grandparents. For Dad went to sea at 13, lying about his age, with his slightly older friend Harry Hansen. He last saw his parents at the age of 15, though his mother and father lived another 20 and 30 years, respectively. My father did not talk very much about his parents, nor about his childhood in Sweden, nor about why, as a child of affluence in a poor country, he left for an uncertain life at sea and then on another continent. There was always something missing, no matter how often we asked or heard part of the story. There was something in this man that Paul and I both loved and at the same time feared that we just did not know. Something that our friends seemed to know about their parents. Care and concern were mixed with anger, and I now suspect at least some depression. 20 or so years after Dad died, Paul visited his lifelong friend Harry Hansen, who lived about 30 miles away. Harry was then in his 80s. Paul asked him about our grandfather, whom Harry would have known, having been a child in the same village. Harry, who never lost his melodic Swedish accent, said to my brother, "Your grandfather, Paul, he was a real bastard." Now, this painfully confirmed something that we had long suspected, that there was a great hurt in Dad's childhood that had led him to leave and never want to go back. And it had to do with the fact that the grandfather we never knew was a cruel person. This finally explained why our Swedish uncles, the ones who stayed behind, all used the surname Holmdahl, their mother's surname, rather than Johansson, which would be their surname based on the naming one after the father. And our grandmother, it seems, was also a victim of my grandfather's cruelty. And I recalled my father speaking much more of his loving mother than at all about his father. So something was never healed in my father's life. And as hard as it sometimes is, I have resolved never to allow such questions to go unanswered in my life, or such hurts to go unacknowledged or unreconciled. But being human, I haven't always succeeded. Now, I would suspect that I'm not the only person in Anderson this morning who has had to learn or speak a painful truth in order to begin to heal a hurt, fill a hole in one's history, put a sorrow to rest, reconnect with someone who is estranged. This is an important part of what it means to grow as a person, be it through a religious community, through meditation, through psychotherapy, through a spirit quest. Sometimes what we need to discover is not the fact itself, but the meaning of the fact. We may need to discover what it is that makes us uncomfortable with a situation that we are not sure is wrong, but are convinced is not completely right. Now, some of this truly is at the individual level, such as finding out what skeletons are in the family closets. And in my family, those closets are pretty crowded. I don't know about yours. And some is more social, having to do with contradictions between the world as it is and how we expect or want it to be. Or perhaps how it used to be and how it is now when we liked how it used to be. Well, there have been immense changes in the relationships between men and women. In my lifetime, for instance, social dislocations whose magnitudes are an abstraction to many of today's 19 and 20-year-olds were painful history for many of us. The healing of the world ordered and hurt, yet hurt by misogyny and patriarchy, began with the speaking of truth by the early wave of modern feminists. And it's still not done. The work is still not done, though there has been progress. The same may be said of healing racism, for which the rhetoric, if not the reality of healing, existed in the 1950s, and for homophobia. Truth-telling has been a part of all these changes, even when the changes in the healing are not complete. Gesine Schwan of the Free University of Berlin has spoken of the healing value of truth-telling. And she did much work in the last quarter of the 20th century on the generation of Germans who had lived through Nazism and the general failure in post-war Germany to acknowledge that history. She writes that every society has a moral order, and that, here I quote, "to violate this basic moral rule makes people feel generally guilty, a burden we want to get rid of because it threatens our self-esteem, our self-image, and self-confidence. Therefore, a common reaction against guilt feelings is to suppress them by various forms of denying one's own role or responsibility, instead of confronting the behavior in question with courageous reflection. This denial may range from forgetting to repressing. Well, there's more that could be said about that, but we'll have to save that for another time and talk about, about all those, those social pathologies, but talk about how we can move towards healing. Schwann herself tried to do some work with families in Germany, but never felt that that in her career in the 80s and 90s, a widespread healing took place. And healing does not, under such social circumstances, succeed in isolation. One can prepare in isolation. One can even personally admit, whether through meditation or prayer or reflection, that one is a party to something that has gone wrong. But truth-telling, in her words, needs a partner. And that partner needs to demonstrate what has been called a mood of pardoning. Not an easy forgiveness, but a keeping of the faith that the perpetrator is a moral actor who is responsible for that which needs forgiveness. The partner in truth-telling, which can be the victim of an action, demands that the other accept moral responsibility and does so by treating him or her as someone capable of making moral choices. And this was one aspect of the genius of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa after the end of apartheid. It insisted that anyone seeking amnesty, whether from actions on behalf of the government or on behalf of the African National Congress or other opponents of apartheid, accept the moral responsibility for their actions. Then amnesty would be granted not in the interest of punishment for crimes, but in the interest of reconciling perpetrator and survivor. And the other aspect was that the survivors, as well as the perpetrators, were granted moral agency to tell their stories as well. Similarly, the Truth and Reconciliation model was used more recently here in the United States, in Greensboro, North Carolina. Going back, in response to an incident that took place on November 1st, 1979, where Nazis and Klan members, in cooperation, murdered 5 participants and injured 10 others who were marching in a mixed black and white group for the end of racist policies and behaviors in Greensboro. There were political activists, there were workers, there were white residents or black residents of public housing in that march. And the Nazis and the Klan members got away from it, got away with it. Indeed, the police withdrew just before the demonstration started because an agent of the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency who had been working undercover warned them of it in order to prevent violence, and the police took that as a clue to get out of the way and let the violence happen. So during the year 2003 to 2006, an effort was made in that community to achieve truth and reconciliation. And the widows of the men killed, and it happened to be all men who were killed in this particular shooting, announced before the process began that they would seek no further criminal charges for the killing of their husbands a quarter century earlier. A powerful first step towards reconciliation and making truth-telling possible. And that proceeded and much improved among the people of that public housing project, their neighbors, and those who had been part of that shooting. For even the activists who were not originally from Greensboro, but survived, and the several widows, stayed there to keep building a racially just community. Well, Schwann in her essay makes the point that if the partner in truth-telling is not a redeemer such as God, then a concrete human being must take part in it. There must be a concrete human reconciliation. And that happened in many instances in South Africa and in this instance in South Carolina. In writing about this, Schwann focused on the restoration of civil society. Yet she drew upon the Jewish and Christian traditions that are essential aspects of Western religious and secular culture, such as were described more than 60 years ago by the rabbi and historian Theodore Gaster, who wrote much of the Jewish customs in a modern understanding. And he wrote that reconciliation sought in Yom Kippur is not a case of God working on humanity, but of the divine in each human being seeking reconciliation with the divine in the other. Reconciliation is a human responsibility. Now, each of us can articulate a moral code. We can articulate the shared moral code of our faith, of our local community, of our nation. They overlap, but they may not be identical. But we can articulate a moral code. We can see where we have, as individuals, lived up to our code and when we have broken it. We can examine ourselves and choose to change. In honesty and truthfulness, we can work to heal ourselves and the world. But if someone else has been involved, we need a partner in that truth-telling, preferably the other person who is hurting from that issue or incident. And it is not just about crime and politics, but also about how we treat our families and each other. My relationship with my father would have been easier had he been able to reconcile with his father. Learning the truth about the grandfather I never knew years after my father died still made healing possible between my brother and myself and for ourselves. Healing with truth begins with honest self-examination and requires the speaking of truth with others, not to condemn, but to know and to be reconciled. And so may it be for us during these days of awe and wonder. Amen. Blessed be.